Good afternoon, Milwaukee. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. You are currently tapped in on the award-winning 101.7 The Truth, live from the American Family Insurance Studio in the beautiful heart of downtown Milwaukee. Happy Monday, everybody. Real talk, real people, real conversations. Hope that you all had an amazing weekend. We got some things to talk about today. Before I get started, just have to put out my daily affirmation, and my affirmation for today is I will not allow the enemy to defeat me. That doesn't necessarily mean an entity. It can be mean anything sent my way to make me feel tired, to make me feel as if I need to give up, whatever the case may be. But I won't accept being defeated. And whatever your affirmation is, put it in the chat. 833-212-1017. You guys can call in today. Listen, I don't want to simply tell you about what happened, right? That's not enough anymore. You got a phone. We have Google, social media, right? So you can get a headline in a matter of seconds. But what I do want to do is address what happens beneath the headlines, right? Who made the decisions? Who had the authority to make it, who benefit from it, and who was exposed to the consequences. And when everything goes wrong, who is held responsible? Because there is something that connects a lot of the stories we are talking about through today, even though the stories themselves are completely different. We are talking about the DEA and fentanyl. We are talking about a Wisconsin stalking investigation where authorities entered a man's home and discovered human remains. Serial killer. We are talking about Milwaukee's debate over jail tablets and protecting witnesses. We are also talking about the situation that happened in Cudahy at the gun range that sent me down an entirely different path about Black families, hunting, survival skills, and what practical knowledge we've allowed ourselves to become disconnected from. And then before five, we are going to talk about something that tickled me. Although it is a serious matter, this was probably one of the most insane stories that I've paid attention to this past weekend. We are going to talk about a gentleman who federal prosecutors say allegedly created an entire fantasy that included being connected to the San Francisco 49ers, except apparently the 49ers did not get the memo that this guy was playing for the 49ers. Then at five, we're talking about Target again, right? But I'm not doing the basic Target did something racist, so everybody get mad. No, we are going deeper. How can an institution be sophisticated enough to study Black buying behavior and still manage to do the things that they do? What am I talking about? Well, apparently Target has issued some type of advertisement for Halloween with a young man, basically blackface, some type of costume. He has a blackface, looks like he's shucking and jiving, and we all know what happened with Target before, so we need to talk about this, but not from an emotional stance. We need to talk about it from actually removing certain people in positions. And at six, I have some special guests in the building. So last week, The Truth, 101.7 The Truth, Meech, myself, CC Shannon. Really, the past few weeks, we've been going to the Boys and Girls Club on Tuesdays and Thursdays to do, some radio, some media, teaching the youth about being radio personalities, how to create commercials. And we ended up having two winners. So they're going to join us at 6 o'clock. We get a chance to actually sit down with the youth. With that being said, I want to hop right into this DEA situation. So according to Spectrum News in Miami, a controversial policing tactic that allegedly permitted staggering amounts of deadly fentanyl to reach the streets as federal authorities sought to build bigger drug cases is now under investigation by Republicans on the House Oversight Committee. The committee's chairman, Rep. James Comer, a Republican from Kentucky, sent a letter Monday to the attorney general requesting records related to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration's controversial strategy of monitoring, yet not seizing, major fentanyl shipments. The request echoes concerns raised by officials in New Mexico. The DEA whistleblowers recently reported being ordered to stand down rather than to seize hundreds of thousands of fentanyl pills in possible violation of Justice Department rules intended to safeguard communities. So last week, the state's Attorney General Raul Torres sued the Justice Department seeking to force it to turn over some of the same records being sought by Republicans on Commerce Committee. I'm going to say this before we jump into this, especially, you know, Black people, we know that we're on drugs did not just start. We know that them approving drugs to not only enter into our country, but to be distributed throughout our country is not anything that's new to us. But yeah, let's get into it. So the Justice Department Inspector General has announced a nationwide review, right? The DEA Administrator Terry Cole has defended the agency's broader investigative practices, saying these are complex, long-term investigations guided by law and policy. So I'm not going to reduce sophisticated federal investigations to DEA good or DEA bad. The real question is more difficult than that because I understand the strategy. However, you catch the person driving the car today. Maybe you've got a carrier, right? And follow that carrier and maybe you'll find the distributor. So what that distributor. So what that means is a lot of times in law enforcement, they will stand down on busting whoever it is that they're looking for if they're considered as a small fish. So they will allow a transaction to happen until they go until they're able to reach the bigger fish. And the issue with that is American citizens, you know, get damaged in the process, meaning that they're actually not stopping these pills to be released, which means that there's a probability of them getting into the hands of the people of this country, right? So because fentanyl doesn't know it's participating in a federal investigation, let's think about that. The pills aren't sitting there saying, don't worry, everybody. DA is watching us. If the drugs continue moving, then they are moving towards somebody. And eventually there is a real human being on the other side of that strategy, right? Somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody who doesn't even know the pill they are about to consume was potentially being watched 2 states ago. And that person did not consent to becoming a part of the operation, right? And that's the part that is most serious to me. The government has a power individual citizens don't have. Government can make what I call institutional calculations of acceptable risk. We are allowing this because we are trying to accomplish something bigger. That is their thought process. And who gets hurt in the process of them attempting to solve something bigger, right? The bigger the fish, the bigger the pay, the bigger the fish, the bigger the position. We all know how this goes. And sometimes that calculation may genuinely save more lives in the end. However, the fact remains that our government is so willing to allow there to be additional deaths revolving around fentanyl because they want to catch the bigger fish, which contradicts all of this movement and all of this, you know, push for drug abuse, fentanyl specifically, right? It's disturbing, but again, it's not anything that's new. It's not anything that we aren't familiar with, and I'm not quite sure exactly what we can do about it. But again, this is very alarming, because if they continue to do things like this, then it kind of goes against, again, it contradicts the purpose of us trying to have, you know, funding or whatever the case may be to prevent this, right? If they're going to allow it, what's the purpose of preventing it? So we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back from break. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. I want to hear from you, 833-212-1017. How are we feeling about this? Again, this is something that we are familiar with, evidently, but it still does not give them the right to do so. I'm actually interested in figuring out how many times this has happened, and we need to compare and contrast when it comes to the quote-unquote solutions that the government provides for drug overdose. However, they are obviously a part of the problem as well. Again, we got to go to break. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 1017 The Truth.
Let me see you go back. Let me see you come back. Now let me see you go back.
1017 The Truth. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. You are live and direct. If you are just now joining us, be sure to follow us on YouTube, like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, 1017 The Truth. You can also follow me on social media on Instagram at The Jazzy Effect. That's THEJAZZIEEFFECT. If you are just now joining us currently, I was talking about the DEA tactic blamed for letting fentanyl flood the streets. It's currently being investigated by the House Republicans, right? So, my take on this, because again, I don't want to spend too much time on it for the simple fact we are well aware that this has been happening for quite some times, right? Many of decades. But suppose season one shipment today saves 50 people, but exposes the investigation and allows an organization responsible for millions of pills to survive. What do you do, right? And this is where the situation becomes real, because maybe sometimes investigators have to allow something to move briefly in order to prevent, you know, greater harm. And I get it, right? But if that's true, then the burden of accountability should be greater, not smaller. Power should come with an increased obligation to explain itself. So the greater your authority to place other human beings at risk, the greater the public's right to scrutinize the rules governing that authority. So this is where I'm going to leave this at today. I understand wanting the bigger fish. I understand dismantling the entire organization instead of congratulating yourself for arresting the wrong person at the bottom, right? But when the bait can kill somebody before you finish fishing, the public deserves to know exactly how much danger you are willing to tolerate, because the government cannot ask citizens to practice accountability while treating its own decisions like matters too complicated for citizens to question. And maybe that's the first thought I want to put inside of the atmosphere today. Power isn't dangerous simply because somebody possesses it. Power becomes dangerous when the people affected by it are told that they don't have enough information to question how it is being used. Heading into other news, 47-year-old Benjamin Larson of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, has been charged with felony stalking, right? I just want to give this disclaimer that this article I am about to read is graphic, meaning what it's pertaining to. It is sensitive. I do apologize in advance, but I do want to make sure that you guys are aware. I'm pretty sure you have seen it on the news already. But again, I want to make sure you are aware. So according to WTMJ, a stalking investigation in Madison led authorities to discover skeletal remains, serial killer and personal items linked to the alleged stalking victim at his home in Fond du Lac. 47-year-old Benjamin Larson of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, was charged with felony stalking earlier this month after Madison police said he repeatedly contacted a woman whom he briefly dated in 2013. So according to the criminal complaint, the victim dated Larson for 2 months back in 2013 before she ended the relationship. She said Larson had continued to contact her through letters, emails, gifts, and cards, and filed professional complaints with licensing boards in multiple states. In one 15-page email, Larson allegedly wrote that he got a tattoo of their symbol and the victim now a part of my living body. This is what the tattoo says. It has the victim's initials and it says now a part of my living body. Investigators say Larson wrote in letters that he kept the following memos from his time with the victim. Here are the memos. Every single word you wrote to me. A Ziploc bag full of polished stones and stone wire wrapping kits. Across you sneakingly and lovingly left in my pocket. A lone earring still tangled with your hair. Two pieces of scrimshaw. A pressed blue skilla. A coin dated back to 1984. A blank shell necklace ready for engraving. Two cards and a single voicemail that remains. These are all of the things that supposedly he kept of the victim throughout the years. So again, we're talking about 13 years, right? Which is very frightening, very scary because there is no, most importantly, there is no timeline on being psychotic, right? This means that for the past 13 years, he has been harboring these things. He has been contemplating, thinking about this victim and constantly reaching out to her. Authorities say let me back up. This led to investigators searching his property. And what they found is similar to a lot of things that we have seen in the city of Milwaukee and throughout the state of Wisconsin. I don't know about y'all, but looking back at the history, it's like majority of the serial killers come from Wisconsin. Not majority, but a lot of them do. We had the egg guy. I can't remember his name up north who used to take people's skin and use it as furniture. Obviously, you have Jeffrey Dahmer. You also have Maxwell Anderson. I don't know what that's about, but that's strange that Wisconsin breeds serial killers. But when they searched his property, they found multiple human skulls and other skeletal remains, material associated with serial killers, including, again, that's his name, Ed Gein. A jar labeled as containing part of John Wayne Gacy's brain in a locked basement bedroom containing items allegedly connected to the stalking victim. So he has not been charged with murdering anyone connected to those remains as of yet. However, this is what they found on his property. So I can imagine that those charges will soon be, you know, upon him. So for this woman, right, let's remove what they found on his property for a second. Let's talk about the person who was allegedly experienced the behavior before police ever walked into that basement, because that's the most important thing, right? Once the story becomes strange enough, now everybody pays attention. But what about year 3? Year 6, year 10, right? What happens when somebody repeatedly tell you, I don't want contact, and you interpret their silence not as an answer, but as an obstacle, right? So we have constructed an entire culture around teaching potential victims how to manage another person's inability to accept a boundary. Say, change a number or block them, or don't post where you are going, don't go live when you are there, park somewhere different, tell a friend where you are, don't respond, don't provoke them, watch your surroundings, all of this advice, right? And Although it is practical, it's not enough. The person respecting the boundary is the one being asked to completely recognize their life before someone else refuses to respect it. So we have what I call retrospective wisdom. After something terrible happens, suddenly everybody can identify every warning sign, right? Oh, he kept calling her. He showed up to the job. She said she was uncomfortable, right? How didn't nobody see this? Sometimes somebody did see it. The victim saw it. We just required them to prove danger before the danger had fully developed. And here is the difficult question. How do you protect somebody from a crime happening without criminalizing somebody merely because another person is afraid? So that saying is tough because you don't want to falsely accuse somebody, but we have to take more preventative measures when it comes to situations like this. So our inability to perfectly solve that tension cannot become an excuse for ignoring escalating patterns. If someone is constantly filing reports or attempting to file restraining orders, so on and so on, that should be taken seriously. And again, this happens a lot in the city of Milwaukee, too, where you know, there are situations and you go to the authorities or you go file a restraining order. And then, you know, it's like either the case gets dismissed because it's not enough evidence or they just provide a restraining order. The crazy thing is I seen on social media this guy and people were actually laughing about this and it was very disturbing. This guy, he sat down for an interview and basically was saying he is someone who is a part of, you know, beating women. Part of domestic violence. And he was saying it in a serious manner. And everyone attempted this, thought that this was a joke for whatever reason. But he was saying, basically, what is a restraining order going to do? If I want to do something to you, there's nothing that a restraining order can do, right? And that is an issue. But most importantly, how can you stop someone that you don't know nothing about? I've had two stalkers in my life, like real stalkers, have no idea how they found out where I stayed, had no idea about how they found out my telephone number, anything. Didn't know these guys from a can of paint. And one of them actually was arrested about 3 years ago for sexual assault, right? Luckily, I have men in my life that I could call, you know, who can ride past, spend a night, or, you know, reach out to them personally. But what if I didn't? What if I didn't have anyone around who was willing to protect me, right? I don't know their names. I don't know anything about them. How do you stop it? That's the scary part. We're going to move on to something else when we come back. We are going to talk about the situation with the tablets in the county jail and the prison system overall. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl Jazz Tyler, 101.7 The Truth. What's up, Milwaukee? It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. You are officially tapped into the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. If you are just now joining us, before we went to break, I was talking about the situation in Fond du Lac. But we are going to move into something that's pertaining to victims. But I really, really want to get you guys' opinion. So according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, concerns over the use of electronic devices inside the Milwaukee County Jail have become the latest sparring point between Wisconsin governor candidates. The debate began after a bail hearing on August 22nd for Thomas Zollicoffer, a 36-year-old Milwaukee man charged with several felonies, including three counts of first-degree intentional homicide. During the hearing, Milwaukee County Judge David Borowski disavowed the access Milwaukee County inmates have to electronic devices after learning that Zollicoffer used a county-provided tablet to intimidate witnesses associated with his case, according to a video of his hearing. Why is the sheriff's department handing laptops or iPads to defendants? This is what the judge asks. There is no need, constitutional or otherwise, for a defendant to have a tablet when they sit in jail. how does this tie into the governor's race? Well, let's talk about Tom Tiffany and his statement. So this is what Tom Tiffany had to say. As governor, I will put an end to free inmate tablets while eliminating tablet access entirely for violent criminals, murderers, and sex offenders. When criminals are behind bars, their victims should finally be safe from them. We should never give violent offenders another tool to terrorize their victims from a jail cell. Now, Crowley's campaign team responded, and they stated that while David takes this situation seriously, he doesn't take seriously the opinion of someone like MAGA Congressman Tom Tiffany, who is so extreme, he voted against releasing the Epstein files to protect a bunch of pedophiles, voted to defund the police six times, and applauded January 6 rioters being pardoned, some of whom went on to be arrested for molesting children and possessing child pornography and has no business ever becoming governor. Listen, I don't know who on Crowley's campaign team they reached out to that day, but baby, that was ready. Okay? They was ready. And should we be protecting victims on the inside or not while the predator is on the inside or not? Absolutely, right? I don't care if they are Democratic, Republican, whatever. We should always protect the victims. However, let's talk about accountability versus collective punishment. If a person uses access to threaten a witness, take that person's access, right? Restrict that person's communication. Investigate their conduct. If a prosecutor can prove a new crime, charge that person. Protect that witness by any means. But why does America so often move from individual abuse directed towards collective restriction? One person abuse assistance, everybody becomes a suspect. And obviously, if you have loved ones who are on the inside, or if you know any of the brothers and sisters who are incarcerated, and it's evident this message isn't for sex offenders or predators, we understand the importance of communication. Right. Especially in a climate like this, when we are talking about the bodies that was located in the back of the prison in Mississippi. So many inmates that who families did not or wasn't aware that they were even inside of jail. They just was missing. And they had cases and they was locked up and the bodies was being buried in back of the prison. Right. You guys remember that story? I believe it came out earlier this year or the end of last year. Then we're talking about how inmates in Louisiana are being treated. Inmates in Wisconsin, they continuously say that the prison system is overpopulated, in which we know. But just because our brothers and sisters are on the inside does not mean that they should be treated a certain way, which is why it is important to have these form of communication, right? The tablets, not everyone is misusing the tablets, right? I'm currently working with, on behalf of Tupac's Foundation, we are currently in partnership with Mr. Verley Word, who is an inmate inside of Lawrenceville Correctional Facility in Virginia. And Mr. Word has been in prison for about 35 years for one crime that he committed, which was a bank robbery gone wrong. And then it became, a robbery gone wrong. And then it became a cold case. And during his time, he developed a curriculum called the Peace Curriculum. And since he has implemented this curriculum inside of the prison facility, there has only been one altercation the past 3 years at this specific location, right? How does this happen? How is he able to be so successful? Because he have access to communicate and speak with the people on the outside so that we can work on curriculum, so that we can work on guest speakers, so that we can make sure that once the people graduate from this program while they are currently incarcerated, that they continue to do the work in these practices once they are released, right? Imagine if he did not have that access. Imagine if someone else is like being in school, right? In a kindergarten class. You tell the class to be quiet, sit down, no playing. And one student gets up and then they head over to the toy chest and begin to play. And then the teacher says, hey, No recess for everybody because one child decided to get up when they were told to sit down, right? It is unfair. It is unfair. And obviously, it takes someone like a Tom Tiffany to make these statements publicly so that the public can begin to understand where he stands, right? We all know that this affects our people specifically, right? Yes, there's all types of ethnicities who are currently incarcerated. But when we talk about, again, and I hate to say this because the media has been running with this for so many years, I don't know where we stand right now. But we all have heard about 53206 being the zip code with the most incarcerated black men, meaning a lot of the black men who are currently incarcerated comes from that zip code, right? We also know that there has been in custody deaths recently. Matter of fact, the sheriff's office has had 10 in custody deaths the past 4 years. Right. So imagine removing that type of access from our brothers and sisters who are currently incarcerated. And again, we are not talking about sex offenders. Or anybody who does this type of behavior to where they are bold enough to reach out to whoever the victim is, which is why everybody need not to be punished. I cannot express the seriousness of this. There are a lot of people who it probably won't resonate with because they don't have family members or people that they love who are incarcerated. But as someone who works inside of the prison system, whether it's the youth, whether it's adults, whether it's men or women, this is very dangerous. This is very dangerous. Imagine if your child was 17, which means that they will be would be inside of a adult prison, right? No matter what the crime is, they're still a child. But let's say they made a mistake. They were 17 years old inside of the prison system. And they are in the federal prison system or a state. They have no idea about this environment. They are, you know, there are some issues with them being assaulted physically, right? And for whatever reason, you know, they're not able to make a phone call or, you know, there's people that are beating them up because they want to make a phone call. Imagine what that tablet could do. The access that it gives them, right? So again, I understand protecting the victims, but I do not believe that an entire prison system should be penalized for one person's mistake. Now, if you go look at the data and it comes back and says that, hey, with this specific prison, there has been multiple instances where inmates are utilizing tablets for the wrong reason. And the wrong reason can be making threats to witnesses, right? You know, putting something on social media that they shouldn't be, things of that nature. Then I can understand for that prison specifically. But to get up and make a statement publicly stating that you will remove all access from prisoners because of one mistake, lets us know that, A, something we already knew, Tom Tiffany absolutely give zero crap about black people because we all know that majority of the system here in Wisconsin holds, the population holds black people. Don't care about their well-being, the fact that they, you know, need this communication, so on and so on. These are things that we already know. Now, what I will do and will say about this is I truly, truly, truly appreciate the way that Crowley's team took the time to list other things that we had no knowledge of, right? And I've been following the campaign. I've been following this this election for quite some time, and this was my first time hearing about Tom Tiffany voting against the release of the Epstein files. My first time hearing about him applauding the January 6th rioters. In which some of the rioters were being pardoned and they were also arrested for molesting children and possessing child pornography, right? I have heard about him defunding the police, but the other things, that is the first time that I heard about that, which, again, is brilliant because it makes you look at things from a different perspective. So, yes. Shout out to Crawley team. Tom, Tiffany, go have several seats, please. We got to go to break. When I come back, I am taking you somewhere you probably don't expect. A man dies after suffering a gunshot wound at a Cudahy range. Police are investigating at the same time. Wisconsin hunting season is set to begin the first and second week of September. And while I was reading all of this, I stopped and asked myself something. How many black children in Milwaukee actually knows how to hunt? Not shoot, but hunt. We're talking land, food, patience, conversation, discipline, right? Survival. And then the question gets bigger. When did survival become somebody else's culture? That's what we're talking about when we come back from break. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler. Do not touch that dial. One-on-one-seven The Truth, it's your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct at the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. Listen, Friday a man suffered a gunshot wound at Eagle Sports Range in Cudahy. Staff called 911, provided aid, and the man was transported to a hospital where he later died. Cudahy police are investigating and have not publicly established the circumstances of the shooting, so I'm not speculating about what happened. But reading this story alongside Wisconsin's September hunting calendar sent my brain somewhere different. And I want to ask, how many black children in Milwaukee actually knows how to hunt? And I immediately realized some of y'all heard a different sentence than the one I said. You heard Jazz. Jazz want kids with guns. No, I said hunt, right? Can you identify an animal? Can you understand the weather? Can you track? Can you move quietly through unfamiliar land? Can you safely handle equipment? Can you understand conservation? Can you clean up what you harvest? Can you turn an animal into food instead of thinking meat originates under plastic wrap, right? And then I expanded the question. How many of our children know how to fish? How many of our children knows how to grow vegetables, preserve food, make something from scratch, use basic tools, perform first aid, navigate in the phone, if the phone dies, all of these things, right? How many? So we already know that the school system has removed, home ec. That's actually where I learned how to cook. I learned how to cook in home ec. We used to build lamps. We used to sew. Although my family, my aunt and my grandmother are seamstress, so I already knew how to sew. But we know that home economics have been removed, right? The reason why I am tying this to the gun range is because obviously people go there for training. It is not a place that you suspect for someone to die. And I'm purposely not going into depth about that because, again, we don't know actually what happened. But I just want to reiterate the importance of training our children. And I wish in which our children are obviously going to do whatever it is they want to do when it comes to the guns. I'm not speaking for the youth who has nothing to do with crime or anything pertaining to using or utilizing weapons. But the reality of the matter is when you go online, when you, read articles, when you look at some of these videos, you see that European people, white people, typically teach their children how to hunt, right? And I want to emphasize the word hunt. I want to emphasize that because hunting isn't just hunting for food. A lot of our people are actually being hunted as we speak. All of the cases where black people in this country are found hung on trees, right? You have obviously the Nolan Wells and the Carmelo Anthony cases and so on. That is still a form of hunting, right? They are in real time hunting us. And yet our babies have no knowledge of what it means to hunt, primarily because we understand the history when it comes to any form of weapon being inside of our hands, let alone the hands of Black youth, right? So by nature, you know, we've lost that way. We've lost that way because we are so afraid that in the event we do bring our children up to teach them how to hunt, that if ever they are caught with the weapon, no matter if they have their license, whatever the case may be, obviously those situations turn out different when you are Black. So we can tell you, you know, a multitude of things when it comes to this topic specifically, right? But let's talk about why I am bringing this up. How revolutionary is it for our youth to actually be aware of how to hunt and grow their own food? You can tell us, meaning the people, all we always talk about being oppressed. We always talk about law. We always talk about prison, school to prison pipeline, which are all necessary conversations, right? But again, I also want to ask, what can we actually do, right? In the event, last week we talked about the power grid. If I'm not mistaken, over the weekend there was another situation where a lot of residents in the city of Milwaukee were without power. About a month ago, a little over a month, I had experienced that too for about 10 hours total. In the event that happens, are you prepared? Are you and your family prepared that if the electric grid was to go off completely, which means that your child does not have any knowledge of how to navigate throughout this city because they consistently use this GPS. They don't come up in a time prior to social media or telephone, cell phone. So they don't know how to mentally take it in the event they had no electronics, right? Tablets, iPhones, Apple Watches, whatever the case may be. The reality is a lot of us, not even just the babies, but a lot of us, period, do not know how to feed ourselves without the government, don't know how to build a house, don't know how to repair nothing, don't know how to produce anything. And that's a harsh reality, but it's real. And I'm bringing this up again because when you take a look at everything that is happening in this, not just this country, but this world, but specifically this country, this will be the first thing that comes to my mind, right? And again, oftentimes people label these type of conversations as conspiracy theories. However, prove me wrong, but any conspiracy that has yet to come up has been true this far. And I don't know. I don't have any predictions on where this country is going to go. But what I will say to my people is that you best to be ready. You better be ready to figure out how to survive on your own. Now, one thing we as a people know how to do, we know how to survive, right? We know what to do, right? However, do you know how to survive collectively? Are you willing to work with the village and the community to make sure that everybody is on one accord? So when we bring history into this, and I want to do that because oftentimes we forget the importance of agriculture. And shout out to Judge Lena Taylor because she has worked so hard throughout the years to try and get this state and the legislators to understand the importance of agriculture. Also, shout out to Marcus Landry. He has the Beulah Farms in which he actually shows children how to raise chickens up and then turn them into food. I won't go into details, but he does have a program that shows our youth and anybody for that matter how to properly, you know, have animals, raise them up and do what you got to do to make sure that you and your family has have something to eat. So I'm not going to, again, tie in history into this. I'm not going to pretend that every African society lived identically or every Black American ancestor was a hunter, right? But one thing about our ancestors and one thing about our people is that we have a deep history when it comes to agriculture, when it comes to hunting, when it comes to fishing, to food preservation. And I'm not talking about you guys just going out buying a whole bunch of water bottles, right? Just waters and stocking it and just canned goods, right? Because what will you do when that is out? What will you do when you no longer have that stock in your basement? Do you know how to live off the land? Do you know how to live off the land? Black people in this country survived generations where access to formal institutions were limited, right? We knew how to improvise. We knew how to grow and repair. I mean, this is stuff that I'm not, that you guys know, right? Think about it. When we were younger, majority of the people who grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even the 80s in the city of Milwaukee, somebody has some type of tree in the backyard. Apple tree, peach, root bar, whatever it was. Our grandparents had trees that bared fruit right there in your backyard. And that is no longer. We're going to finish this conversation when we come back. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 101.7 The Truth.